Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Ghirelli, Italy's premier rosary designer, creates beautiful heirloom quality rosaries for every season and celebration. Hundreds of unique rosaries honoring Jesus, Mary, and the saints await you at Ghirelli.com. With CMF Curo, you don't have to compromise your faith to get great health care. Finally, there is a pro-life option that respects and engages your Catholic faith with a community that supports you in living healthcare fully alive. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. We got a kind of a special treat for you for Thursday. We'll do open forum next hour with Jimmy Akin. This hour, will we talk about what shall we call it? Well, toxic femininity, that's what we're going to call it. Certainly for most of the history of the world, motherhood was not thought to be the enemy of womanhood. But in recent decades, that has changed. To be fully a woman in the eyes of much of the modern world, one must be protected against motherhood, separated from it. Even where motherhood is accepted, it's not allowed to crowd out the really important things in life, like personal satisfaction. The child, no longer the crown of womanhood, is an obstacle to it. And in such a world, Mary, the mother of God, is no longer the model of womanhood. She's only kind of a pathetic figure. Femininity, as the world now proposes it, is toxic in many ways to children, to marriages, to society. It has become a kind of selfish self-love. And here to help us understand that and maybe give us the antidote is Dr. Carrie Gress, a doctor of philosophy from Catholic University of America. She's the author of Nudging Conversions, A Practical Guide to Bringing Those You Love Back to the Church, Ultimate Makeover, The Transforming Power of Motherhood. And the very popular, The Marian Option, God's Solution to a Civilization in Crisis. And she's got a bunch of other books. It's too many to list here, but the newest one is The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing Culture from Toxic Femininity. Dr. Carrie Gress, thank you for coming in studio today.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
I've always enjoyed chatting with you, but it's especially nice to get to actually meet you in person.
It is amazing how finally, after all these years.
I know. It's weird. I always find it weird that when you have Skype, mm-hmm. We've met over Skype, so it's almost the same thing, but still
not quite there. Yeah.
So I obviously writing a book called The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing mm-hmm. the Culture from Toxic Femininity. You are trying to become popular and have lots of friends everywhere.
Very popular. Yeah.
Maybe help us. Well, first of all, what do you mean by anti-Mary? We're familiar, of course, with the term Antichrist.
Sure.
Anti-Mary means what?
Well, the anti-Mary idea came to me when I was writing The Marian Option. Mm-hmm. And I think I was first struck by thinking about who Our Lady was and all this role that she's played throughout history. And then to see how, in what way she's so disregarded in our own culture. It's almost laughable to suggest that women should follow her as a model of femininity.
Right.
And so that was certainly the first thing. But then the second thing that really struck me was even just when you hear about Adam and Eve, you hear Mary's the new Eve, Christ is the new Adam. But there was always female-male complementarity. But I realized there was no female complement to the Antichrist. But mm-hmm. the more that I started looking at the culture and the way that trends were going, particularly from the 1960s onward, it was really clear to me that it was women that were being attacked, and that was really a focus of the culture in terms of trying to take women away from the church. So that's really where the idea came from. So it's not – we're not talking about the anti-Mary as a particular individual, but more as a spirit, the way St. John talks about the spirit of an Antichrist.
Right.
So in that respect. But
and maybe a recurring theme. Mm-hmm. Like with the Antichrist, you would say, well, right. there's certainly been Antichrist figures throughout history.
Mm-hmm.
And so anti-Mary, mm-hmm. yeah. well, you wouldn't want to say that one right over there.
Right.
But you can say that this is a recurring right. pattern.
We have people probably in mind that we could point to, I think, in the culture. But no, I'm
Wait, this
could
be a really exciting show. You're going to name names.
I'm not naming names.
Oh, okay.
People have the names already, I think. But
yeah, right.
No, I think it's more just a specific way in which women have been targeted. And I think if we look at culture, we look at the history of the universe, really, we've never experienced something like what we're seeing today on this massive scale, where we're told that actually our children are the obstacle to our success. Women have never looked at their children that way. Yes, of course, abortion and all these other things existed, but not on the massive scale that we see now, where it's 3,000 abortions a day in our own country, where it's actually celebrated and as something good to make your children the enemy. And that's just something completely historically anomalous. And I think everything flows out of that, all this destruction that we're seeing in the culture. And even this notion of toxic femininity comes from that, because we've really turned the vices of women into virtues in our culture. Well, so that's, I think,
indeed.
How to frame it.
Okay, so maybe part of toxic femininity is the creation of the phrase toxic masculinity. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I think
Is that what you're kind of hinting at? Is that this is a tool of a kind of toxic thing itself?
Right. No, absolutely. Because one of the things that's fascinating about this dynamic, and I spent a lot of time even looking at fairy tales and sort of who's the protagonist, who's the antagonist in fairy tales. And, in our own culture, it's in a fairy tale, you always see sort of there's the wicked witch or the older woman who feels like her power is going to be usurped by someone who's younger and, an upstart that's more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't see that pattern in our own culture necessarily. What we see is women who really want to just be like men, who are striving to be like men, but at the same time, they don't want men to be men. So it's this really weird dichotomy where you see women saying, we want to be like you, we can be better than you, we can beat you in everything.
Right.
But you have to change because what you're doing is toxic. So it's this odd dynamic that's going on between men and women at this stage. But at the heart of it, too, is it's, ironically, women think that they are trying to become like men, but at the same time, and are mimicking that, but at the same time, they're trying to sort of elevate womanhood. So there's a lot of
mixed messages
and unclarity about it.
Right.
And and obviously a lot of it starts back in the 60s. And
well, a pure lie is not very appealing. A lie mixed with truths. And it's certainly true that there's something about women that wants to be heroic and that and you think of I don't remember the writer. I think it was maybe Saint Bernard of Clairvaux saying, when Mary is kind of given this is what you're being offered, you just have to say yes and then the whole world can be saved. This image of all the angels and saints gathered around just waiting for Mary's yes. And so you have this idea of, but it's a natural thing for a woman to want to be heroic in self-giving what I'm trying to say is this toxic femininity doesn't do away with that, but then it exaggerates it or distorts it into a manly kind of heroism. Mm-hmm. So it's a twisting of the truth.
Yeah, I would actually say I don't know that I would characterize it as heroism. I think it would be more just this deep desire to do good, to bring to bring the good to other people's lives. And you can see this very clearly in even the women's movement. I mean, there's Phyllis Chesler's a feminist who's written a new book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Feminism. And in it, she just goes on list after list of describing all the things that they thought they were doing that were great for women, taking them to get abortions and all kinds of things. And so you can see that desire is very deep in the heart of women. It just becomes distorted because, of course, it's a neo-paganism rather than actually being cultivated and formed through Christianity and the proper ordering of self-gift and all of those kinds of things. So I think there's a lot of confusion, too, about this because, of course, as Aristotle pointed out, our minds love to go from one extreme to the other. So we think about feminism on one hand, but most of us, you know, we think, well, what's the alternative? We think, well, it's doormathood. And I think that's one of the struggles, especially among Catholic women. I know myself, I you feel like maybe I shouldn't be critical of this because I've received so many great things in my life because of feminism.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, because it's a distortion, again, back to your point about there being all this little bit of a lie mixed into it.
Right.
And so we aren't really getting a true sense of what ordered femininity is. We're just seeing sort of these extremes of either, you know, the radical feminism or on one hand, or doormathood on the other. And I think that's the real task at hand, especially with this book, is to try and, like, where's the middle of that? How do we help understand it in a way that's healthy and life-giving,
right,
and ultimately will make us happy?
Certainly the mixing of the feminist revolution with the – and we may have talked about this before. I probably maybe even learned a lot of this from you. But with the mixing of the feminist revolution with the sexual revolution, the idea that liberation meant not just you know what? A woman should be paid the same if she works the same for a man, mm-hmm. which has actually always been a principle of justice.
Mm-hmm.
But that somehow sexual liberation for women was at the very heart of this.
Right. Well, and again, it comes back to that idea of we want to do everything that men do, even if they're not well-behaved men. We want this kind of freedom and this kind of capacity, whether it's work or sex life or whatever. And I think that's been obviously kind of our undoing, because this is not where human flourishing happens. This is not real where authentic womanhood happens. And it's been deeply problematic for the last 50 years.
And it's even hard to talk about now because it actually is everywhere, mm-hmm. this toxic femininity. Like it is, there are probably, you know, the majority of the college professors in the United States, were mm-hmm. they to hear what you and I are discussing right now, mm-hmm. would see us as somehow backwards or out of touch or maybe even afraid mm-hmm. of real womanhood.
Right. And the ironic thing, of course, is that are we seeing that women are actually happier? Has feminism made women happier? And of course, the answer is no. If you look at, you know, any kind of statistics about what I call happiness metrics, things like substance abuse, depression, suicide, divorce, all of these things are really pointing to women who are certainly not happier, probably more medicated than anything. That seems to be kind of the overriding reality that I think people are sort of sweeping under the carpet because they think all mm-hmm. of these things have been so great for women, and yet women are not happy with this. So I think that's the real crux. And I think it's a real opportunity for us to help women understand there's a reason why you're so unhappy. And it's partially because human nature can't be changed. And I think that's another big lie that we have been sold, mm-hmm. that we can change human nature and women can do whatever they want and still end up peaceful, joyful, and flourishing. And that's just not the case.
Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest this hour. The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity, is her brand new book. Your questions are welcome. I haven't given out the number yet. Wanted to find out what this anti-Mary is all about before we did that. 888-318-7884 is the number. Your call is welcome, whether you'd like to challenge us on what we are discussing or whether you'd have a friendlier question for Dr. Gress. 888-318-7884. Take a quick break. Be right back with more right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Just turned 31. Feel that I'm being called to the priesthood. And I've been attending daily mass and just finding that falling more in love with Jesus every day and finding more opportunities to, you know, make sacrifices for him, myself, and just allow him to enter me more. You know, how do we fully surrender to God and to his will so that we can more clearly hear his calling?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. God has a plan of love for every man and woman on this planet. If we'll listen, if we're willing to listen, Dr. Kerry Gress, maybe a year and a half ago, I can't remember the timing of it, or brought us a wonderful book called The Marian Option about maybe listening to what Mary was saying as a guide for working our way through the miseries of the modern world. And now brings us this new book, The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. Again, your calls are welcome, 888-318-7884. Something that strikes me in the book and in what you say is that this is actually this idea, this very warped idea of womanhood that we has been sold and now makes millions and millions of people miserable. It was actually sold. It wasn't like this was a quite conscious decision of people who knew how to do marketing, of people who knew. So can you just give us a little bit of that story?
Yeah. Well, back in the 1960s, you've got someone like Kate Millett, who ended up writing the book Sexual Politics, and a bunch of her friends in New York. You've got Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem, all kinds of women who were sort of the grandmothers of radical feminism. And basically, they cropped up around the same time that TV was really being used as a means to influence people. And so as a result, what ended up happening was that they were able to take their message far beyond what anybody anticipated at that point. They were also able to create women's studies programs, those we see certainly throughout the country, and certainly were founded by someone like Kate Millett. And so, yeah, I think that their message and the medium of television just work simultaneously to sort of carry this message that this is really what would ultimately going to make women happy. And again, as we mentioned before, it obviously hasn't, but it was also based on a lot of misconceptions about womanhood, even everything from Germaine Greer talking about how, you know, children can raise themselves. We don't need women to do that. A lot of things that, you know, at this point we're seeing just the fallout from those really bad ideas. And so it's just proliferated in a way that I don't think anybody at that stage even dreamed it could have. And you even have, you know, Kate Millett, there were 12 women that, you know, was no accidental number, but they were very much involved in Marxism and in the occult. And, you know, they felt like this was their sort of evangelical project to carry this message out to women that they, you know, they needed to have careers. They needed to basically glorify women even above men. That was sort of the pinnacle of existence in their mind. And again, the children were really the obstacle to that. That we had to show, women had to show that they were tough by being able to kill their own children because men could kill other men as soldiers. So there was all these very twisted ideas that were behind this that I think a lot of us that have grown up during this phase never heard about because it just wasn't talked about very much.
And young women growing up now don't know this story. They don't know. They don't. They just, they're simply thrust into a world where these ideas are everywhere. It's like being born into the poison.
And there's nothing out there really to stop it. I mean, that's sort of the sad and scary part. I think even just ironically looking at where is it that women got this idea that they were equal to men? I mean, this doesn't exist really in other cultures, civilizations, religions. This is something very unique to Catholicism, certainly started with Christ, and we see this in Scripture. But the fullness of it really came through understanding who the Blessed Virgin Mary was, and that's really the flourishing that happened. And so, you know, there's so much people are so critical of the Catholic Church and think the Church has been backward on this. But if you want to look at some powerful women, look at Our Lady and look at all of these female saints who have done remarkable things. I mean, compared to even what we would consider successful in our own culture today. I mean, someone like Catherine of Siena blows any of that out of the water. And so there's something really essential to understanding that connection with the Church and understanding the importance of womanhood and flourishing in that.
I don't think you even have to go to Catherine of Siena. I mean, she's one of the greats of history, but the average, you know, say Italian mom of the of the 14th century was the virtue in that woman and what she brought into the world is remarkable compared to what is being asked of women today.
Yeah,
women
even today. Elizabeth Ann Seton. I mean, she only lived till 46, and yet she founded the first orphanages. She founded the first schools in the United States. And by the time she died, she had 20 houses of nuns, and just completely proliferated through the her work. And yeah. By the age of 46, she did all of these things. She obviously became the first U.S.-born saint as well.
Well, I know this call will come, so I'm going to give it to you before it comes so you can deal with it now. And I know there are lots of people that want to talk to you, and I'm going to those. But look, Dr. Gress, you just want women to go back to the 1950s.
Please don't go
Have you ever heard that before? Has anyone ever said, look, you're just trying to send women back to the 50s?
Yeah. No, and my argument is if the 1950s were so great, the 1960s never would have happened. So anyway.
Well put.
Thank right. you. So yeah. Let's not go back there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you don't want women to be trapped at home with their appliances and their children.
And,
okay.
No 1950s.
Okay. Shall we go to calls then?
Sure.
All right. Destiny in Baltimore, Maryland, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Destiny, thank you for downloading the app onto your phone. Your question for Dr. Carrie Gress.
Okay. My question is a two-parter. Number one is, what is wrong with the idea of women having leadership roles? Because I'm a Catholic woman, but I also consider myself a Catholic feminist. I'm against abortion and stuff like that, but I do believe not only that they're equal, but that women should have more leadership roles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then my second part was, you know, a lot of the Catholics in, you know, sermons and stuff talk about giving to what hurts, and I feel like it perpetuates women becoming rescuers and over-sacrificing. So how mm-hmm. much giving is too much? So right. I'm sorry, it's a two-parter. But.
No, that's great, Destiny. Right. Thank you. You
Thanks,
got both
Destiny.
Parts?
I hope so. You'll have to help me if I forget one.
Okay.
But the first thing I would say is I think we have a real issue in the culture with just even the word feminism. I think it means so many different things to so many different people that to even really pinpoint what you mean by that is confusing. So I would suggest that I'm not in any way saying that women shouldn't be leaders, that women shouldn't work, that women shouldn't be using their gifts. I mean, if I thought that, I certainly wouldn't be sitting here, you know, out 3,000 miles away from my own family. But I think that the reality, and this is, I think that there's something of this issue of that I'm sensing in your question of the women that I'm suggesting that women should be doormats. And maybe that's not what you mean at all. But again, I think that we have to first of all be clear about what we mean by feminism. I don't like the word because I think it has so many different meanings, and I think it means so many different, you know, to each person kind of understands it in their own respect. But if you look actually at what the early radical feminists wanted, and my book, I have a whole chapter on it and just really lay it out, how so many disorders in it. It's almost a little scary because it's almost like saying, why don't we rehabilitate the word mafia? There's so much loaded in what they originally meant by feminism that it's very hard to sort of break from that. So if you want to call yourself a Catholic feminist, that's great. I don't have an issue with that. I just think you need to be clear about how you're using it and of course, being pro-life. But then, of course, you add all these definitions onto it or all these qualifiers, then it's like, well, why don't you just call yourself Catholic? It might make it an easier conversation. So I think that's part of the issue is just even defining our terms and figuring out how do we deal with this. As far as the issue about giving till it hurts, you know, I think that can be a difficult one because obviously, you know, we all need spiritual directors. We all need guidance. We all need the sacraments. We all need things to guide us and lead us to the will of God. And I think that's ultimately going to be the recipe for all of us. But I do believe, and we see it in the saints, that we're all called to suffer the way that Christ suffered. We're all called to that model. And it's not meant just for women. It's meant for all of us. It's certainly meant for men to make tremendous sacrifices in their own lives as well. And we know that those sacrifices are not fruitless, but in fact actually change our character, make us more humble. I mean, there's so many amazing fruits that come from that. So in any event, I hope that kind of answers your question, but it just comes back to, you know, proper discernment and prudence instead of, you know, making yourself a slave, I think.
Destiny, how does that strike you?
It strikes me pretty good. I'm a compulsive giver. I wasn't trying to say that mm-hmm. that she was saying that they were doing that. I was just trying to get understanding.
Right.
And then the third question I wish I could have asked, I just thought of it, was what about people is there any possibilities for people who are asexual or other sexual identities to welcome in the Catholic Church? Because I don't have sexual attraction, so that's one thing. Right.
Man, I wish you could have asked that question, too. That's a really good question. Man. All right. Thanks, Destiny. Now, what? I'm just teasing. Since she asked it, you go ahead.
Let's address that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is one of the really difficult issues that we're dealing with our culture today, because the culture wants to make it a given fact that we can change our genders. But if you look at our bodies, there are, what is it, like something like 3,000 different genetic codes for a female that differ from a male. And, you know, everything from, my elbows are bent, yours are, if you hold your arms out, it's going to be straight. Because
what?
I'm meant to hold baby, you're not meant to hold a baby. There's
well,
just
I like
tiny,
holding babies.
Well, yeah, but it probably hurts your arms a little bit more than
that's
it does
so interesting.
Mine.
I never knew that.
I have a bend and you don't have one. Huh. So it's, you know, our hips, all of these kinds of things are, even on a structural level, all those realities are there. So I think that the bigger issue is to even just ask the question, why are we seeing so much confusion about gender differences? We haven't seen this in the past. And of course, the church is 2,000 years old. We've seen everything. But this is something that is a real issue of our own age. And I think some of it has a lot to do with the fact that the breakdown in the family, people didn't get the love that they needed from their mother. They didn't get their love from the father that they needed. And we see this very clearly in the lives of the radical feminists, that there were so many mother issues there that were, this is what kind of led them off on the wrong path to begin with. So I think we need to be firm in the belief that God did create us male and female, and we've got to start from there, and instead of sort of masking these issues, get down to the heart of the problem.
That's such an interesting, masking the issues by deflecting it into other things instead of getting to, people aren't getting what they need at home in a family.
Yep.
The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. That is the title of Dr. Carrie Gress's brand new book. She is our guest this hour, and you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew that she wanted those things, that in them somehow she would find God. Over the years as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest this hour. It feels like a long time since you've been on the show. Is that me, or has that been a long time?
I think it has, yeah.
That's a failing on our part. Unless you've been avoiding us, in which case...
No, I just thought it was Jimmy Akin that I...
Mad at you?
Yeah, that you got mad at me that I let the cat out of the bag about his birthday, so... Wait, or his anniversary or something. I don't remember what it was. You had a cake for him.
I forgot that
yes.
whole thing. Yeah, we had a cake for Jimmy on his 25th anniversary, I think.
Yeah,
here.
That sounds right.
And then you said there's a cake for Jimmy and before he came on.
Yeah.
And so that's why... That is, I need to reassure you, that is not why.
Oh,
it's entirely an internal problem of scheduling.
I didn't actually really think that was the case, but nevertheless, that's great.
Well, if we just say we'll have you on every time you write a book, will you write more books?
I got more coming.
Oh, good. That's very good.
This fall.
Because The Marian Option, fantastic book. Then you did the one on Marian Consecration for Children.
Mm-hmm.
And then now we've got The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. Pretty soon, you'll have us all straightened out if you keep writing.
Well, I'm running out of gas, actually. There can't be too many more.
Right. Let's go to Maria in New Jersey, listening on EWTN Radio. You are up next with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, please.
Hi. First, I want to tell you we have a whole bunch of children making their consecration on the Annunciation. So thank you for that beautiful book.
That's great. Thank you, Maria. That's great.
Yeah. So secondly, just this question. I have 7 children and I homeschool and have been married 32 years. And I just find that, the most beautiful thing we can do as mothers is the formation of souls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what God will look at. And I think we've lost that in our mm-hmm. culture. And I just wonder why you think priests and bishops don't even speak about that. I mean, as a mother, mm-hmm. that is your number one job.
Yeah.
And we never hear it. So, if nobody ever tells another woman that,
mm-hmm.
how are they to learn that?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question. I think that the hard thing is that I think priests and bishops have been pretty beat up by women in general in terms of... we all know the angry woman that goes in to the priest who doesn't like the way his homily or something, and then it reports to the bishop and whatnot. So I don't want to say that they don't have courage, but the fact remains is that we've had like 50 years of women marching into places and demanding that things be changed. And I think that's part of the problem. The second reality, of course, is that, and you can see this across the board among men and women, men don't like to fight women. Look at Adam before the fall. He didn't want to say no to Eve. I mean, it was just the way it was. Like, here's some fruit. All right, I'll take it. So I think that that's another struggle. But I think the real issue when it comes down to this vocation of wife and mother, I think that women have to pick up a lot of slack and start promoting it and start talking about how fulfilling it is and how life-giving it is and how transforming it is. I think that's part of our vocation that we can carry on and we can witness to in a way that certainly a priest or a bishop never could. I will say the one thing that I think would help tremendously is if we did start focusing also, certainly among women, but also even in confessional, about the issue of envy and jealousy and that role that it plays for women, because I think it's a very unique kind of sin. Women always want more. You see this with Eve. He said that there's more that we could have. And this is a kind of a constant underlying current of women's issues. And so I think this is something that we need to also bring out more in spiritual direction and just be mindful of it, because it's incredibly corrosive. And I think that's behind a lot of what is motivating us is all this comparison that goes on among women that we try to kind of sweep under the carpet, but it's certainly there in terms of issues that we're having in the church.
Okay, Maria.
Thank you so much. Yep, God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that call. I wonder if priests preach those things, if how many people would listen to them too. I don't know.
Yeah.
We got you for that.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean?
Read the book. Yeah. I'm not going to be preaching from the pulpit anytime soon.
No, I don't mean preaching from the pulpit, but I mean, I think that women talking to women especially about things like that, is more effective.
And I think that's been part of our struggle. I mean, if you see what's happened with feminism, it's just kind of come in and bowled over everything. There's been no line of defense against it to sort of hold back what happened in the 60s. And this is why we have so much of our academics, fashion, politics, Hollywood, pop music, all of it is completely monopolized by this idea that abortion is necessary in order for a woman to be successful. And I think this is part of the problem is we've just sort of sat back passively and think someone else should take care of this. Maybe the priest or maybe the bishop should take care of it. Wouldn't that be great? But women need to hear from other women. And I think that's the power that feminism has shown and the media has shown is that other women are sort of dictating to us what we need to think. But as Catholics, we need to push back against that as well.
Yeah. And it does seem like that's happening. I feel like there are very... like I'm thinking of Helen Alvarez or yourself or many of the women on Catholic radio. Yeah. There are more voices of Catholic women saying, no, there is a gospel and here's how it will fulfill you.
Yeah.
Let's go to Olafine, I assume. I hope I pronounced that correctly, in Fairview Heights, Illinois. Olafine, you are on with Dr. Carrie Gress. Your question, please.
Hi there. Yeah, you got the pronunciation right. Thank you. So I'm very happy to be hearing this discussion, and I would like to hear more of it everywhere. So I think a major component of what is going on, at least with my generation, so I'm 34, and the clock is certainly ticking. I'm very aware, and I feel the pressure. But I spent the greater part of it, it took me till I was 31 to find a man that was like somewhat malleable into a grown man, because my generation is full of, a lot of, it's a lot of it isn't their own fault, or at least it was more conditioning than anything, very infantile men. And I feel like the women are running into this problem. The women are my age, and I was pretty selective. I mean, I'm looking around, and I feel for a lot of what the women have to put up with. I do feel lucky and very fortunate. My husband is the first to admit it, and he's a big fan of Jordan Peterson. And he's at the age of 33 now, just finally, starting to grasp what it means to be a man. What's the masculine role?
There's no question, Olafine, that there is this infant. Well, I don't know if it's infantilization or if it's perpetual adolescence among men.
Right.
Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you are asking is just like the weed on top of this whole root system of the whole culture. And one of the things that I think is really important that women understand is that we are the soil of the culture. If women go wrong, like every gardener knows, if you got bad soil, nothing's going to grow. And Satan knows this. This is why he's come after us so in such a purposeful way. Because if you get the women, everybody else is going. There's this great Mae West quote, something to the effect of, wherever women go, men will go right after them. And I think that's very true in the sense that women have forgotten who they are. Women are very confused about who they are and what it is they're supposed to be doing today and what it is that's ultimately going to make them happy and bring them, flourishing relationships and healthy marriages and children. But because of the fact that we've had women so disordered for so long, men don't know how to react either. And women have had very low expectations of men because, again, they're trying to act like really bad men, bad boys. They want sex without consequences. They want any kind of job. It's basically kind of a whole package of selfishness that we see in men, and women have tried to mimic this. Because they thought that it looked appealing and would help them. So in any event, it's an incredibly difficult problem. But I think the issue is we have to get back to women being women. And then from there, the family can go back to growing the way that it ought to.
Olafine, thank you very, very much. I hope that was helpful. I also think, Dr. Gress, if I may add from a man's perspective, if you say this man goes to college and men are – in many and various ways told you're superfluous, you're not needed, they're going to behave like they're superfluous and not needed.
Right.
They're going to say, okay, I'll go home and play video games.
Yeah.
And then you get women a few years later going, where's all the men? Well, you told them they're superfluous and not needed.
Yeah. No, I think that's an absolutely great point. I'm glad you brought that up.
The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. Dr. Carrie Gress is our guest, and you are welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH. Take a quick break. Be right back with more right after this.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Don't you feel sometimes like there's so many people in the world, how does he hear your prayer? Never think of that, huh? Everybody thinks of that. I'm only a little grain of sand on the seashore. Oh, but that's not true. See, God is God. And you and I have to let God be God. I don't know how he does it. He's God.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Catholic Answers Live. We're talking with Dr. Carrie Gress about her brand new book, The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. And in my experience, if you get a book from Dr. Gress, you're not going to be disappointed. I'm not going to pretend that I read the one that you and George Weigel did. But all the ones that
when
I have read.
When you go to Poland, you can read it.
On my next trip to Poland, mm-hmm. Yes, because it's about the sacred places in Poland that from Pope John Paul II.
Right, all those places that helped form him as the man that he became to be Pope.
So, yep. So I don't know why I had to admit that to you, that I hadn't read it, but
it's
all
okay.
The ones I have read.
I forgive
read,
you.
You're like,
I forgive
oh,
you.
That makes me feel good. Thanks. I want to take a minute to talk with our good friend, Rochelle Lucero, who is director of social media here at Catholic Answers and a theologian in her own right. And the podcaster behind the podcast, Clumsy Theosis. Hello, Rochelle.
Okay, so here
I'm looking at this. Love languages and intimacy with God. First of all, I'm all about the love languages.
The love languages, right. Yeah.
It's very helpful. are you over-promising with this intimacy with God thing? All right, so you talk about intimacy with God. Is that poetic language or is that actually a thing that people can have?
Right. Now, by asking that question, you're totally opening a can of worms. But yes, to answer your question, yes, you can. And I want to ask you a question. Are you familiar with the Lord saying that I am the vine and you are the branches?
I am familiar
with
that,
what does
yes.
he say before that?
Wait.
A lot of us forget. So right before he says that,
Tim Staples wouldn't forget.
He says, "Abide in me, and I in you." Right, and then right after that, he says, "Because you have to abide in me in order to bear fruit." Right,
yes.
And that's what we're all called to bear fruit. And the way that looks in our life is to live a life of holiness and to become who God created us to be in that holiness, giving our gifts to the world. And so we have to have intimacy with God in order to bear fruit in this world.
I see.
Yes.
Yeah, if we're disconnected from
then
what do we got?
Exactly
we're just a
what
dead
he
branch.
Says. Yeah.
All right. You did it again, Rochelle Lucero. So I got to hear the new Exodus in the Gospel of John. Actually, I heard a little bit of that one, but I haven't heard it all the way. And then you've also got – I'm just doing the most recent ones. Theosis and Inheriting the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
We Bring the Light.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the name of a rap song or something? What are we quoting there?
You know what? I don't know what it is, but it's stuck in my head, so it has to be from something.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm guilty of any copyright infringement or anything there, but
I am well aware of the fact that you can get Clumsy Theosis anywhere where you can get reputable podcasts.
Yes.
I don't know about the dark web or that,
me
but
either.
Wherever
we're children of light, so we should
wherever
you
the
know,
forces of good have assembled
yes.
to make podcasts, you can get Clumsy Theosis, and you should get Clumsy Theosis.
Yes.
It costs how much?
It's for free.
What?
Yes, it's free to anyone who has internet. So I guess pay for your internet or go to a coffee shop, buy a coffee, use their internet,
and
listen to it there,
and find out how to become more and more like God, your Father.
Exactly.
Rochelle Lucero, thanks very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I always like it when you come by. Clumsy Theosis, as we said, anywhere where you get good podcasts, you can get Clumsy
Amen.
Theosis. Dr. Carrie Gress, you ready to go back to phones or have we worn
oh,
you
sure.
out? Really? Oh, you have all this energy. John in Huntington Beach, California, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. John, your question for Dr. Carrie Gress.
Yeah, well, thank you. I guess my question is there's 150 million American women, and it seems that people of the Catholic faith are disappointed in the thoughts of those women and what they're doing with their lives these days. My question is, what specifically are American women doing that is so disappointing to the Catholic faith? And really, why do you have the authority to speak for 150 million American women on this issue?
Excellent questions, John. I'm sure there are no answers forthcoming. Dr. Karygas, hey, how do you answer that?
Thanks for your question, John. I think that the big issue is really the question of abortion. 3,000 abortions daily in this country. And these aren't babies that are being killed by strangers. I mean, this is historically how mass murders happen, with stranger killing stranger. These are parents killing their own children. And there's something diametrically opposed to humanity in that, particularly when you have those kinds of numbers. And when it's accepted as a necessity, actually, for human success. So I think that the to answer your question, I think that's the fundamental piece, is to say that our motherhood is an obstacle for us, when in fact it's written right into our bodies, it's written into our souls. There's so many elements of it. So I would say that's the specific fact. But as far as authority, I'm just an author. But the reality is that you have so many millions of women who are absolutely miserable, who, you know, there's women get to their 50s, 60s, 70s, and they say, this isn't the life I was promised. This is not what I signed up for. I don't have a husband. I don't have children. This is not what I wanted or saw my life to be like. And I think we have to address that and address that, that unhappiness, because it doesn't do them justice. It's not fair to them to say, well, just get over it. When in fact we have actually really slid in some bad directions that have led to a lot of heartache and brokenness among families and whatnot. So my authority comes from the fact that I really want to help bring healing to women and to society. And I think our society is the fabric of it is really broken down because of this issue of life.
Is that acceptable to you, John?
I just wanted to comment, it does not do the abortion debate any good at all to put this smokescreen of femininity on it. If you're going to argue against abortion, you ought to argue against abortion and not make the argument about something that doesn't have anything to do with abortion. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe your deal about 60-year-old women are unhappy with their lives. I think a lot of women, especially young women, mm-hmm. are really, really happy with the opportunities that they do have now that they didn't have mm-hmm. before. And you really didn't answer my question about, other than abortion, what specifically are these women doing that is...
Well, there is a little bit of the element of, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play in that? I mean, if 50 million abortions, or I don't know, what was the number that you said?
60 million. We're at 60 plus.
If you have to say, other than that, what is the problem? And it's also true that Dr. Gress mentioned the great unhappiness of women. And if those two things are not enough, I don't know that you can be satisfied, John. But did you want to address any more of what...
No, I mean, I think that obviously, you know, I have benefits and have, there are things that I can do and have because of what has happened in the last 50, 60 years. But I don't think that's something that should silence me to speak up about what these other injustices are. And I think this is something that women do by and large because we feel guilty and feel like I shouldn't say anything. I got a PhD in philosophy. I would never have gotten that 60 years ago, 50 years ago. But I think to use that to overlook all of these other issues is not necessarily helpful, and it ultimately will not be helpful to women, period.
John, we'll leave it there. Thank you very, very much for that call. Ray in Colorado, listening on Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130. That's EWTN. Ray, your question for Dr. Karygas.
Yeah, you guys are always saying how, you know, men don't want to be married and they're not stepping up, whatever. What about the you hear all the time women say, oh, I don't need a man. I just mm-hmm. want one. And really, you don't need one for familial love or to help raise your kids. I mean, mm-hmm. how are you going to fix that? No decent guy that's good is going to want to marry a woman like that. And that's why, mm-hmm. like you said, they're unhappy.
Right.
How are you going to change their attitude?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, Ray. This is the real crux of the issue, is just recognizing that women have been sold this lie for so long that ultimately we're going to be happy if we're just career women, if we're self-absorbed, if we can just focus on what our desires and wants are and not recognize that men are fundamental and crucial and vital and actually necessary for our own flourishing. And the children are also vital and important. And so I think what the reality is we've gotten to this place where women are afraid to speak up about that, where we don't want to talk about it because we feel, again, back to this idea of feeling guilty about the opportunities that we have. But we have to address that, again, because women are the soil of society, and families are just simply can't flourish without good women.
Ray, thank you very much for that. I'm getting the sense, and I want to get this clear from you. Are you of the view that there are natural desires within girls who then become women, mm-hmm. that are those natural desires, they're basically being talked out of them for a mm-hmm. large period of their life mm-hmm. and then talked into some other thing. Like what right. you really want is this.
Yeah.
Is that your view of what's
yeah,
happening to women?
I think there's a lot of that. I know, you know, from my own experience, just I found myself as a 25, 30-year-old woman working in Washington, D.C., and was not happy, was just, you know, I was doing everything that the culture was telling me I ought to do, what fashion magazines and career, you know, advice columnists, et cetera, et cetera. And that ultimately was not satisfying to me. And it was, I think that's part of the problem is because we were being taught that we have to be aggressive, we have to be assertive. It manifests itself in all kinds of different ways. You know, we have to go for that career, and that's the most important thing. That's really distorting our characters in certain ways, and we're not able to see clearly what it is that the desires of our heart are. But I think that there's something very hopeful, particularly among millennials, because they haven't had to sift through a lot of this junk the way that people of my generation did. And so they're getting back to that point where they're saying, well, what really are the desires of my heart? I'm not trying to compete with men. But we do see this again, this idea of being promoted over and over again that, you know, women have to be stronger than men and that they need to triumph over them. So it's just this balancing act. And because we don't have other voices out there sort of suggesting alternatives to it, that's really the only, you know, voice that people are hearing. And they feel like that's the direction that they have to go, is with what the culture is dictating.
So if you were to refer that to Mary, then you mm-hmm. would say Mary experienced a great deal of suffering in her life, mm-hmm. but would you say that she lived a life that was attentive to the actual desires of her heart?
Yeah, well, on three different levels. First of all, I think there's three basic desires to every human woman, to every woman. I think she desires to be known and loved, and we can see that very clearly in who Our Lady was in her relationship with God the Father. She knew how much she was loved by him. Mm-hmm. So when a woman knows that, that's already like the first piece of the puzzle. And we get that from our parents. I mean, there's a lot that comes from the family in that. That's a key piece. Second piece is as I mentioned before, this desire to do good, to reach out to others and to offer ourselves to help improve the lives of others. And that can certainly become misguided. And then, of course, there's this reality that we desire to be beautiful. And, you know, we can see that being abused in many different ways for sensuality or for vanity.
Right.
But that desire is fundamentally there in most women. But these are the things we see in spades in Our Lady. I mean, she's every apparition that we've ever heard about of Our Lady, the person says she's the most beautiful woman in the world. St. Yeah. Bernadette said, you would want to die just so you could see her again. She was so beautiful. So I think that this is one of the reasons why the first half of the book is sort of the understanding what the anti-Mary is. The second half of the book is really a look at who Our Lady is and mm-hmm. why modeling ourselves after her is, in fact, that the route that will lead to happiness, because all of these desires can be met by her and can be met through the church. And it makes a lot of sense when you start seeing what are the desires of our hearts and how do we meet them? And the church has been way ahead on this for centuries. We just have to remind people about it.
They can't be met just by competing with other people, whether
Absolutely
it's economically
not.
Or sexually
right.
or any other way.
Exactly.
That's not going to do it.
No.
The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity is the brand new book from Dr. Carrie Gress. I believe we have time for one more caller, but you're going to have to be quick. I'm sorry, Aaron in Portland, Oregon. Real quick with your question, if you don't mind, for Dr. Gress.
Yes, I'll try to make it as quick as I can. And being that women have receptors in our brain in order to attach to our babies and family and community, the exploitation of women since the 60s to believe that we can just have sex with no consequence, do you think that by this, 60 years of this, the reason women can so easily abort their babies without a conscience and not realizing the devastating consequences of that decision.
Oh, is being desensitized by this idea of a kind of sex without consequence?
Yeah, well, we're okay. Naturally, as women, we're naturally, this is how we were created, is to bond with babies. This would be an unthinkable thing.
Right. Fair enough.
So, I'm sorry, do you mean that on like a biological level or just on a psychological level that something's happening to
a... biologically, obviously.
Okay. Yeah, I think that certainly, you know, sin has that desensitizing reality that is always going to be there. And I think also just the scandal of it, witness isn't the right word. Negative witness, was there a word for that? We're scandalized by that. But it does, we have become desensitized and we think that it's just something normal. And it's clearly not.
It does seem systematic desensitizing so that we can do horrible things.
Yeah.
And feel okay about it.
Yep.
Dr. Carrie Grass has been our guest. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's very nice to meet you in person.
Yes, likewise.
The book, once again, is The Anti-Mary Exposed, Rescuing the Culture from Toxic Femininity. It is from Tan Books, but you can probably get it anywhere where quality Catholic books are sold. Probably quality books of any kind. It would fit right in there with them. Next hour, Open Forum with Jimmy Akin. Hang around for that. We're happy to take your call. 888-31-TRUTH. Right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health-sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.